Okay, welcome back to Coast to Coast AM. Father Sebastian with us, and this hour we'll take your phone calls with him as we talk about vampirism. And welcome back to Coast. We'll take your phone calls with Father Sebastian. Father, remember the old original Nosferatu? How would that play today?
That movie was revolutionary, like many of the German movies in the 20s, including the film Metropolis. And if you look at anything from any perspective, you can see a vampire tint in it, depending on which perspective. And Nosferatu was what really brought the sunlight kills the vampire story out. And I think that's a big misconception, is that vampires don't like the sun. And that is where it really started, was the sunlight story. I mean, I've heard vampires tell me, I don't like the light. And I'm like, well, I go to the beach, but I wear sunglasses and a lot of sunscreen. It just was an awesome movie. And it started really a revolution in cinema. And I think there's like 500 vampire films now. It's its own genre.
They were ugly vampires of those days, Father, weren't they?
Oh, yes. I'm glad they're a little bit. I like that style, but I'm also glad that we have people like, you know, Eric the Viking. He's such a good example.
Are there people practicing vampirism, well-named people or political people that we would just be shocked?
There are, and of course, even today, with all of the alternative lifestyles being really open-minded, like, you know, I mean, ever since civil rights came about in the 60s with, you know, Martin Luther King, we've seen the gay community go through this transformation as well in its relationship with the mainstream world. And a lot of vampires go to me, I want to be accepted by the mainstream world. I need to be let myself out or come out of the coffin. I don't really think that's necessary, because as long as you're not breaking the law and you're not like most people that I know that practice vampirism, you wouldn't even know unless you knew what you were looking for. The way that they behave, the way that they are. I mean, living vampires, if you can read auras, you can see a fireball of energy in a living vampire. While a psychic vampire will have a very dark hue to their aura. They're complete opposites of each other. You know, one is an energy deficiency and is lacking something, and it's a condition, while one is vibrating on a higher frequency. And living vampires really don't, like, people are attracted to them. A lot of people say that they're charismatic and sensual and very well-spoken and usually highly educated and a lot of fun to be with. And they're in engaging positions where they can do things like public speaking. Most living vampires I know are performers or artists or intellectuals. While psychic vampires are always trying to get the world to accept them for a victim mentality. Not all of them, and especially the ethical vampires, but they're trying to be accepted for what they are. And they kind of, you know, the fangs and the size kind of have their own little battle going on. And then they try to work together. But the living vampires just kind of stick to themselves. And what's also interesting about it is the highly independent nature of it. They like being with each other, living vampires, but they're not this like huge social thing between them. It's a great benefit to sit with someone of your peer, like being in a university, a thought tank or a think tank. But they're extremely, extremely independent. So it's like herding cats. Someone went to me, oh, Sebastian, you're starting a cult. And I go, yeah, you try to start a cult of cats and see what happens. Okay, it just doesn't work. There's no way to cohort, unless you give them food and you know, a party, they're going to go their own way. So it comes down to an agreement on what is what. And agreement has to come from inside the heart. And one of those basis agreements is love, and the other one is loyalty. So that's what we stand for amongst the living vampires. And the fangs and sides have their own traditions and cultures. And when you deal with people who are celebrities, the living vampire never has to put it in anybody's face that they're a living vampire. In fact, have a friend who here in Paris who's a huge real estate mogul, and he's very well known in the real estate business. And he's 38 years old. He's all the girls think he's the hottest thing they've ever met. And he wears his fangs and practices this stuff. And it's all psychology in regards to the real world interaction. It's sure. really interesting to see how these people in real positions, power or influence or business, are buying fangs. And I keep my client list very confidential, but the two celebrities that I've made fangs for are Zach Bagans of Ghost Adventures and mm-hmm. Ashley Green of Twilight. She played Alice. But all the other politicians and doctors and all that stuff, the fangs are so discreet, you can take them off. And these people just, they don't need to excuse themselves, because 20 years ago, someone would look at you with fangs and get scared. Today, they're fascinated.
If you went to a restaurant, Father, with these fangs on, could you eat? Could you drink?
No, you drink, yes. The rules for the fangs, I say the rules of Fang Club, are the first rule of Fang Club is don't eat with your fangs in, because you don't get a natural bite. And vampires shouldn't eat anyway. the second thing is don't sleep with them in, because you might swallow them. They'll go right through you, and you'll be in an uncomfortable position, an unladylike or ungentlemanly position the next day trying to look for your fangs. But the thing is, you shouldn't eat with them and you shouldn't sleep with them, but you can smoke with them, you can drink all you want, and then you can do all the sensual things you want to do with them. And kissing is very cool with fangs.
Never tried it. Let's go to the calls. Jack in Park Ridge, Illinois. Get us started here, Jack. Go ahead.
Oh, I thank you very much. And I met you at the Freedom Health Fair, and I gave you that flag. Did you plug it in?
It's being shipped to me, Jack, so I should get it next week or so.
Okay, well, here's my vampire question.
All right.
Every time I hear somebody on about vampires, there's a movie that they never mention. It's called The House That Dripped Blood, and it stars Peter Cushing, and it stars the guy from Doctor Who and a couple other people that are famous. Did you ever hear that movie?
No, but I'm writing it down on my notepad right now, and I will check
it
out.
It's called The House That Dripped Blood. It's Peter Cushing and John Pertwee, the guy who played the third Doctor in Doctor Who. He's in that movie. That is an excellent
movie. I'm not a Doctor Who fan, but Peter Cushing is definitely one of my favorite actors.
Yeah, that's The House That Dripped Blood. And I thank you very much for your time. And George, anytime you want to call me about what's going on in Chicago, I do monitor stuff and I listen
All right.
to the.
Very good.
So thank
Jack.
You very much.
Thank you. And thank you for everything. Thanks for coming out to see us at the Health Expo as well. Now, Peter Cushing, that's got to be one of those oldies, huh?
Yeah, like a Hammer horror film.
Yeah.
I
absolutely.
Think it might be Hammer.
Next up, we go to Ken, first time caller. Go ahead, Ken. Where are you calling from?
Erie, Pennsylvania.
Alrighty.
A mile
Go ahead,
from
Kenny.
Beautiful Presque Isle Lake.
Okay.
Well, on Lake Erie. I was saying that I'd seen something really odd. It was evening, but it was still light out. And we were at a festival for the arts contest listening to a band playing. And there were thousands of people there. You know, they're sitting on blankets, they're sitting on chairs, they're walking around. And probably 100 feet in front of me, walking from my right to my left, I see this older gentleman. And he projected a aura that was so scary. Now, I was saying I worked for the state police at that time as an auxiliary. And I was off duty, but I always carry my weapon. I actually involuntarily reached for my weapon and put my hand on it and watched this guy walk all the way, you know, from in front of me. And he went all the way to the left and he disappeared. And he looked over me and gave me a really, almost like his eyes flashed a gold color. And then he just kept walking. He turned away. And I just didn't know if some of these things come out during the daytime, what kind of creature this could be. I mean, could it, you know, be the Antichrist himself? It was just, I have never in my life had such a feeling, you know, where I wanted to shoot somebody that I'd never seen in my life, but the evil he was putting off was palpable. I mean, it was just, you know, and you in the state police, you see evil, but this was just
real.
I'm confused, and I was just wondering if there was any explanation. Of course, not an explanation, but maybe if you'd ever heard of anything like that before.
I'm sure, Father, you see some real evil out there.
Well, the thing is that from my perspective and the vampire perspective, you know, one of the things that the human culture that has evolved over the last 10,000 years has defined, especially in Judeo-Christian tradition, is defined what is good and evil. And the perception of good and evil is not something in nature. It's something in the human culture. You know, is a hurricane evil or is a tornado evil? Is a wolf evil for hunting? From our perspective, we, you know, laws of nature and force of nature are one thing. And when a human commits a certain act, that's why the vampire is so dear to us, is because it's a manifestation of this natural primal state plus this immortal state that's above us. So humans are kind of in the middle of this experience. And when they look up at something that's more powerful, but still they can communicate with it, because vampires in most mythologies you can talk to, it's a human shape, it's looking in the mirror. And the thing about evil is that if you're looking at this entity or this person and he's emanating something, but he didn't do anything, but he alerted this thing in you, then you're probably relating to a primal nature or a predatory nature. And vampires in general are predators. They're not parasites, except, you know, certain tribes. But as a predator, exist within the law of nature. They go to a final state, but they can still communicate. So they're in a different set of ethics than the average human. But a vampire, unlike a human, is, in my opinion, less savage, because they're only feeding to continue their existence. Just like, and they don't hunt for sport, or they don't hunt or kill for pleasure. In reality, the true vampires that I've met don't hunt because they get pleasure out of it. They hunt because of sustenance and necessity, while humans hunt out of pleasure in sports. They make it a sport. And I think that's a really defining difference between how to look at it. So it's not a good or evil thing. It's really a primal thing.
You spell vampire with a Y. How come?
When I first got into the vampire scene, that was the older Victorian spelling. And I've heard many theories on how that changed, but when the vampire community was young, I kind of related to that as the kind of secret code for identifying someone who lived as a vampire versus someone besides the fantasy and legends and lore, which was spelled with an I. So Okay. It means that it's a practitioner of vampire philosophy.
All right. Our Skype line is open, by the way, at George97313. You also run the Endless Night Vampire Ball events all around the planet. Tell me about that, Father.
Well, Endless Night started as I went to the Anne Rice Ball in New Orleans in 1995 to the Memnock Ball. There's never been an event since then that has been of that caliber. It's a year after Interview with the Vampire came out, and you had to know someone to get in, and it was at St. Elizabeth, so it was just getting pictures, put money behind it. Anne Rice was at the door welcoming everyone with Kirsten Dunst in a carriage. It was just incredible. And it kind of ruined me for all future vampire balls, because there was no better experience that I could ever relate to. And I was working in a club in New York called Limelight, and I had just started making things. This is my first year making things as a professional. And it was incredible. And I went back to New Orleans the next year, and the events were not the same. And I was like, I got to do something. So I created my own vampire ball in New York for my clients.
What do people wear, Father?
Oh, they wear, basically the dress code comes in several levels. Level 3 is the most extreme Venetian. Like if you're going to Venetian Carnival. Level 2 is pretty formal, like black tie or beautiful costume that you make yourself. And level one is basic. You have a mask and a black suit. So new people that are in can come wear that. But we have steampunk, we have classical, we have, it's an incredibly diverse genre. And our main event is going to be October 26th in New Orleans, on Halloween, the weekend before Halloween, at the House of Blues. And that is just one magical weekend. Because you got all sorts of events going on throughout the weekend, and we're the Saturday night. So we're kind of the rock and roll, kind of high energy with great DJs and music. And the Endless Night is just its own culture because it's all based on Fang.
That's exciting stuff, isn't it? But strange.
Yeah, but when you, it's like secrets, it's like a Fight Club party with masks. I mean, without the fighting. It's just, when you feel the energy of the Endless Night, you feel a current of energy. And when you bring people together with a common experience and love, it just amplifies. And now we've exported the Endless Night to, we've of course had the original one, which is in New York, usually around Valentine's Day. And we're actually doing Halloween night in New York. And we also do Berlin, and we've done Paris for 3 years. We actually had an Endless Night at Moulin Rouge.
Tell me about that.
Oh, that was awesome. We did the first Paris Endless Night about 3 years ago in 2011. And Moulin Rouge has a nightclub extension where you can rent this area. And we had about 800 people, and it was the first Paris Vampire Ball. The first real European vampire event ever on the scale that we were doing it. There's been a couple in England, but they were more kind of like fanfare. And the cost, the French were, didn't know what to do because, you know, we have a lot of I make things for a lot of metalheads. So they came in their metal t-shirts and stuff like that. And I'd make them go home and change in a suit. It's really funny. And you've got to be really strict with the dress code because the dress code is the number one element. TripAdvisor rated us the number one Halloween party in the world in 2010 because of our strict dress code. It creates a security experience and also a vibe for everybody to kind of relate. And the dress code really, when you give people a set of tools to create with, they go crazy. And we just had probably, I think, one of our best Endless Nights in Paris at a place called Cabaret Savage, which was a 1920s style blood red circus tent. And nightclub.
All right, well, stay with us, Sebastian. We're going to come back with you, Father, in just a moment here on Coast to Coast AM. We'll take final phone calls here as we talk about vampires. And also, I need 130 of you to go and like us on Facebook. So go up there and do that at coasttocoastam.com. Simply go right to the top there and click that. And also, you know, you can email me anytime at george@coasttocoastam.com. We're going to come back in just a moment on Coast to Coast and take these final calls with Father Sebastian. On our next Coast to Coast program, it's going to be a split show for you. That's right, as we talk about the healing gift and the reconnection. So make sure you're part of that show. When we come back in a moment, we shall take final phone calls with Father Sebastian as we talk about vampirism. Welcome back with Father Sebastian and your phone calls. Father, do you think that beyond the people that play act being vampires, that there could be actually real ones out there?
I think that there's people that are evolving into vampires. Doesn't necessarily mean they are vampires in the evolved state. That's an entirely, that discussion would take 2 to 3 hours to be able to even get a start on.
Yeah.
Because, it, you know, we deal with things like immortality, reincarnation, the perception of, you know, time and space. You know, all of these things are, you know, elements of the vampire, living vampire community and part of the vampire archetype. But, you know, there's the what is a real vampire is to one person is one thing, to another person is another. So, do I think there's a real Lestat walking around and Dracula's? Absolutely not. Do I think that there's entities that have evolved because of vampiric practices and become disembodied and immortal? Absolutely. And do I think that they, you know, people go to me, do they relate to gray aliens? And I'm like, well, let's talk about that on another subject.
Yeah, I understand. Now, when you said the apocalypse has already happened, what'd you mean?
Well, what I mean is that, you know, in Greek, the apocalypse means change of perception. And I could feel, being an energy sensitive and someone who can follow trends, and I see things in a different way, and that's why I can do what I do, is, you know, aeons are 2,000-year periods of time. And we're leaving the Piscean Age. And, you know, we have the song, it's the dawning of the age of Aquarius. The entire 20th century with Aleister Crowley and the evolution of what was going on in regards to human shift in consciousness went from a Piscean Christian era into an Aquarian era. It goes backwards to the zodiac from what I'm educated on. And December 21st, 2012 was the apocalypse. It was the catalyst of the new year between these two aeons. And I could feel the shift of energy and witness it in people's behavior.
Yeah.
Like, for example, I think people are going to be taking religion less seriously in the future in a general way, but it's going to mean more to them because they're not going to take it so seriously. For example, people are less scared. Like, I made things for a Catholic priest a couple of weeks ago who happened to be one of the most amazing people I've ever met. And he really reignited the religious side of it. But not the crazy cuckoo religious side, but like my personal relationship with Jesus Christ himself.
Sure. The spiritual side.
Weird.
Well.
Yeah. And the way he approached spirit, I mean, he's a metalhead priest from Nancy, France. And we're having a grand conclave. I'm renting a castle in Austria in 2015 for all my clients. You have to have things made by me to go to this event. And I've requested that he comes and he does a Catholic mass on Sunday for the vampires. And he's considering it. And I think that would be really funny to see a bunch of vampires go into church. And then on Saturday night, we're going to have a pagan ritual, you know, by a pagan priest. So what's very cool about living vampires is they can practice any religion and still have a common spiritual relationship and agreement.
If the Catholic Church found out he bought fangs, what would they do with them? Excommunicate them?
Well, if the Catholic Church basically discovered the Big Bang, I think... Oh, no, his bishop knows he has fangs. His bishop is... They think it's fine. The Catholic Church is not... The perception that people have of the Catholic Church today is with the top hierarchy, a couple bad apple priests, because most priests I know are wonderful people.
I agree.
Okay, and the 19th century Victorian image of being a Catholic. I think most Catholics I know as people are you get very old school Catholics, but modern Catholics seem to be a very pleasant group of people. And I really like being around.
All right, let's take some final calls here for you. First time caller in Seattle, Washington, Sebastian, you're on with Father Sebastian.
Hello, Father Sebastian. I'm just Sebastian. I was a vampire. I'm also a high priest of a Wiccan coven.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, and that I have no problem with that. And I had my fangs, and I had so much fun. You know, you can't describe to people how much fun you can have, especially on Samhain. You know?
Oh man, I can relate to that, and so can a lot of the people that are listening that are my fang clients. So we're in the same boat.
So what's the number, Sebastian? Father, how many people are vampires out there?
Since I made my mother fangs in 1994 on Christmas Day, I honestly don't know. You got to ask my accountant.
But it's got to be huge.
It's not staggering numbers of billions and billions or millions of people, but it's enough to keep me moving and to be meeting amazing people all over the place. You know, going to music festivals 1 week. Like, I remember 1 year I was in Germany, England, New York, and New Orleans within 3 weeks making feet for people.
It's amazing.
And Croatia. I go to Croatia a lot. I don't know why, but I go there. I've made fangs for quite a few people there, and I have private events for my fang clients now. It's really...
Well, when, you, When you said that France seems to be one of the hot spots for this, how come?
Just like the rest of French things, it only makes sense to the French.
Yeah.
I love this culture. I'm being in Paris right now. I'm coming here. I was standing in front of the opera. And I'm just like, I'm going to do an interview with George Norrie, and I'm standing in front of the opera. This is a very good day. And French are just walking by and doing their baguette. No, they're eating their croissants. And I got here, and Dee, my host, she's wonderful. She had everything out. The French have just been incredibly fascinated with what I'm doing and love it and are just incredibly hospitable. And what? I don't understand it. I just kind of go with it. I don't try to ask all the questions.
David is here, east of the Rockies in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. David, go ahead.
Hey, how's it going? You should really go check out the Vampire Ball at the Endless Light. It was a really amazing time. Me and my wife went this year in New Orleans, and it is, like he was describing, high energy, great costumes, great people. It's the kind of deal where everybody's masked up, and we met people from all over the place, and it was just a really, really, really positive event. It was really cool. It's something that you ought to check out, because when you think of it in terms of what it is and what it's associated with, you got to throw what you think out the window, because it's going to completely throw you for a loop when you see the amount of time and money and energy that's invested into everything that people have on display there. And it's really cool.
Was this your first time there, David?
Yeah, it was our first time. My wife has been really big into Halloween for forever, and due to my work schedule, I don't have a lot of spare time. And so this year, instead of doing anything for our anniversary or for her birthday or anything, she said, okay, I want to go to the Vampire Ball. And so I carved out time, took a couple days off, and she spent the entire year building her costume, if you will, and well, hers and mine, and it was really cool. We've already got our tickets for this year, and it's probably going to be something that we're going to continue to do over and over. It's absolutely amazing.
All right, there you go. Thanks, David. Drive carefully as well. So you got a happy couple there, Father Sebastian.
Yeah, when you hear things like that, it just reinforces that you're doing what people love, and you know when one of my mentors, Victor Magnus, told me, he goes, it's what you make people feel versus what people remember of you. And they remember the feeling. And the feeling that I want to create in these events as an impresario is just the exact reaction that we just got.
Let's go to Maria in Houston, Texas. Hello, Maria. Go ahead.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call, George.
You're welcome.
I just wanted to comment. I was one of those persons that 20 years ago, I had some teeth made when I lived in St. Louis, Missouri, and I was on the fringes kind of the goth culture that was just starting there. And I know the teeth really empowered me. It gave me a whole new idea of who I was and the boundaries that I could stretch. And I've always been involved in kind of alternative religious culture, so mm-hmm. It was added to with that, the depth of it. 20 years down the road, I'm still fascinated by the vampire culture, but I'm not really displaying that aspect anymore in life. But I feel very connected to it. And I just wanted to comment that I think it's really great to see that it's something that has built and allowed people to express themselves in such a different manner.
Do you miss it, Maria?
Sometimes I do. I the teeth that I had made for me, custom made, similar to what Father Sebastian makes, I miss those. They got lost in a move that I made from one place to another. They got misplaced. And I do. I miss them. Like, I wish I could find them.
I love it. I love it. You know, it's a fascinating lifestyle for a lot of people. With, like, the teeth, do you have to physically see somebody, Father?
I do, and I prefer to, because it allows me to size them up and really go through making the white rite a very powerful experience. And, you know, one of the books that I wrote, Vampire, is called Vampire Virtues, The Red Veils. And what I did was I interviewed 1,000 clients over 10 years, and I put together in a very simple format on one page power words and definitions that relate to the vampire archetype. For example, you know, mystery, passion, sensuality, seduction, art, culture, music, cinema, all these words. And I have 99 of them in the book. And what I do is when someone reads the book and they go down with the list, what they do is they choose, and while they're waiting for their fangs to dry, they pick out one word that they find the most empowering, and like immortality or primitive nature or the dragon or whatever. And then they read that before they look in the mirror. And it really is amazing. And to see how they really just wake up, it's amazing how they get into it versus if they're just getting a pair of fangs from a fang maker.
Right. Good point. Nick in Tacoma, Washington. Good morning, Nick. Go ahead.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Good.
Good. So I read this book a little while back, and it had different kind of vampires, like the unintentional vampire, the intentional, you know, psychic vampires and stuff like that. Now, ever since then, I've had, you know, I've noticed that I have to kind of be around certain people. And if I don't have those people in my life kind of goes to chaos. But when I am around those people, after a certain period of time, I end up pushing them away. And I just kind of, it seems to me like I have, you know, that unintentional kind of emotional vampirism. So I just kind of wanted to get your input on what you kind of think about that.
All right. Go ahead, Sebastian.
I think that's something that you need to really focus on. You know, the human mind is a program. It's a computer, and habits work in certain ways. You got to look at it. Do you think it's metaphysical or psychological? And you start always with the psychological perspective or the scientific perspective, or the day side, as vampires call it. And then if that doesn't work, treat the esoteric element too, and kind of treat them as equally serious. You know, you can't do Reiki without going to the doctor, in my opinion. I mean, each one helps each other. So start with the actual day side, psychological, tangible issues, and find out, maybe do I need some education on how to socialize with people better? Do I need to pick better friends? Do I need to decide to cut certain people out of my life, or do I need to change my behavior patterns? It's all a point of self-assessment. And at the end of the day, you can only be responsible for yourself.
Have you ever witnessed a situation that just went awry with this, with any of it?
No. Not really. I've seen people that are crazy get involved, that are just downright out of it. But the, you know, when I make fangs, it's in a controlled environment. And outside of that environment is something where anything could happen. We have dress codes and strict rules about our clubs because, like, you know, we've never had a fight, or inside of one of our parties, we've never had any problems. Okay, of any issues. They always happen outside. So what you look at is the sanguinarium, which is my clan's culture, and then the vampire community are two really different realms. We're our own thing, our own kind of network and ecosystem. And what happens in the other side of the vampire culture, we don't really spend a lot of time worrying about, because they do their own thing. And it seems to be a lot of people who aren't really adjusted into a lot of reality, okay? Or they're kind of feeding each other, or they're really trying to help each other out, but I don't think it's really a healthy environment. And I try to create an environment that inspires and creates a strong discussion and correspondence in a healthy environment. And you really need to choose on who you surround yourself with. Because if you have negative people around you all the time, aka traditional psychic vampires, you really need to be cautious of that.
You sure do.
So it's really who you choose to hang out with.
Let's go to Tony, truck driving in Mississippi. Get you in here, Tony. Go ahead.
Thank you, George. It's a real honor to be on the show.
Thank you.
My question for you, Father, is I'm new to the vampire culture. I'm just now starting to get into it, and I believe that I'm a living vampire. When I first met my wife, though, the attraction between us was like super strong. It was almost like we couldn't be without each other. But here recently, it's shifted to the point where I feel drained when I'm around her, and I feel more energetic and alive when I'm not.
Hmm.
I'm wondering, can somebody develop the psyche vampire, the negativity after a period of time, or is it something they're born with? And if so, is there any way that we could possibly reverse it?
You can also understand that a relationship can become a psychic vampire. And it really depends on the quality of the relationship, because psychic vampirism isn't limited to just human beings. It's really, you know, a corporation can be a psychic vampire as much as a relationship.
Sure.
So what is necessary is for you to assess that. Now, I've been in relationships that have gone bad, and they become an energy drain. So you got to find out if she's a psychic vampire, or you're a psychic vampire and have drained her so much that she's become a sympathetic psychic vampire, all right, and lost her energy, and you started feeding off each other over a period of time. So take a lot of these into consideration. There's a bunch of books that are available on Amazon that you can really check out and find out some resources on how to deal with these things, especially Psychic Self-Defense by Dion Fortune.
Father, I want to thank you for being on the program. Enjoy the rest of your stay out there in France.
Thank you. George, can I plug one more thing?
Sure, real fast.
Okay. On the 21st of of June, I'm launching my first Kickstarter campaign for a project called the Fang Van.
The Fang Van?
I bought an ambulance, and we're going to be making a reality show as a proposal for Major American TV.
Okay, and they can find it on Kickstarter. All right, good idea. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesour, Stephanie Smith, Chris Boros, George Knapp, John B. Wells, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell. I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.